Good morning, and welcome to the July 17th edition of the Piatt County Journal Republican. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and today is Thursday, July 25th, 2024. The front page is dominated by concerns regarding the number of brain cancer cases in Monticello. Data are being collected from the community. This article by Gwen Skiles. This past February, at a Monticello City Council meeting, resident Caitlin McLean spoke about her father-in-law, who died of brain cancer in 2022. "My father-in-law was a smart, strong, witty man," McLean said. "He couldn't talk at all. In fact, the only thing that he could say was, 'I love you,' to his 4-year-old granddaughter, and she was the last person to hear his voice." McLean said her father-in-law, a lifelong resident of Monticello, had glioblastoma, a brain cancer that affects up to 5 in 100,000 persons annually, and primarily occurs in older men, according to the National Library of Medicine. There is no known cure, and patients have a median of 14 months to live after they are diagnosed. Since her father-in-law's death, McLean said she has identified 26 people in Monticello who have been diagnosed with glioblastoma since 2006. Of these people, 24 have already died, and 2 are undergoing treatment, she said. McLean, who works in the healthcare field, collected the information through obituary searches and contacts from residents who have family and friends who have died of the cancer. She said all of the people, except for one, lived in southeast Monticello, south of Lone Beach Road and east of North Market Street. All of the cases on her list are in Piatt County, where Monticello is located. Not all recorded cases are depicted on maps identifying the locations of the cancer victims. McLean said the data indicate that there may be a cancer cluster in Monticello and wondered if tainted water with high nitrate rates might play a role in the cases, because nitrates have been linked to higher cancer rates in farming communities. After her appearance at the council meeting, the city said it had city water tested in the area, and it showed a much lower rate of nitrates than average. McLean said she had contacted federal and state health and environmental officials about the possible cancer cluster. State officials did not respond, but they did write a letter to a state senator in which they said their data did not show any unusually high rate of glioblastoma. However, state data only goes through the year 2020. A cancer cluster occurs when there is a larger than expected number of cases of a specific and often rare type of cancer in a defined geographic area, according to the American Cancer Society. However, health experts caution that the closeness of cancer cases does not necessarily indicate that a cluster has one single cause. Glioblastoma typically only occurs in men in their 60s, according to the National Library of Medicine. But 3 of the cases McLean found were men in their 40s when the cancer was discovered, she said. The American Cancer Society also reported that oftentimes in cancer clusters, people younger than the median age of diagnosis also fall ill. 2 of the people with glioblastoma are siblings, McLean said. Though glioblastoma has a genetic basis, the siblings were tested and neither had the gene linked to the cancer. The National Cancer Institute publishes an incident rate for brain cancer by county in Illinois. However, those data have been suppressed for Piatt County due to insufficient counts and to protect confidentiality. In rural areas, it can be difficult for people to report cancer diagnoses to authorities. In an email statement to CU Citizen Access, which is a group that is monitoring this development, the Monticello City Administrator Terry Summers said, "The City Council reviewed research documents provided by McLean after the City Council meeting on February 26 this year." One document that the City Council reviewed was a research paper written by Mary H. Ward and published in 2008. It said the primary route of human exposure to nitrogen fertilizers is through ingestion of contaminated drinking water. More recently, the University of Nebraska Medical Center researchers found a link between nitrates used by farmers in cornfields and brain cancer. Summers said the City Council was concerned about high levels of nitrates or nitrites in the drinking water. Of the reported potential causes of this cancer, drinking water is the one mentioned possible cause that is directly under our control, as we own and operate our water treatment plant and the water distribution system, Summers said in that statement. The City Council then hired Pace Analytical Services, LLC, a company that provides lab testing services across the U.S. and has three labs in Illinois, to test Monticello water samples on March 8th. On April 22nd, the City Council shared in a meeting that the nitrate level in drinking water was 0.05 milligrams per liter, well below the maximum allowable limit of 10 milligrams per liter. The nitrite levels were almost undetectable, showing less than 0.02 milligrams per liter for the maximum allowed 1 milligram per liter. But McLean said she's concerned it could be another contaminant that the City Council hasn't yet tested for. It is also possible that there is some other chemical that I have not identified that's causing this, and I don't have a laboratory that I can use, and I am not a scientist, and I do not work for the EPA, McLean said. She also said that she has been in contact with federal and state agencies. She said she alerted the Illinois Department of Public Health and the Illinois State Cancer Registry about her findings and asked for an investigation to take place. But, she said, they denied her request. Those departments did not respond to requests for information by CU Citizen Access either. I've called every department. They've passed me along from soil to land to air to water conservation. And they sort of said, that's really concerning, but my department doesn't handle that, McLean said. In an email sent on February 27th to McLean, Kyle Garner, a cancer epidemiologist for the Illinois State Cancer Registry, said the Illinois Department of Public Health would not be conducting a cancer study in Monticello. We don't know why glioblastoma starts, and we have very little, if any, information on risk factors for the disease, Garner said in the email. We are in a situation where, right now, we don't have enough information about what causes the disease or what contributes to its growing. Interventions must have clear evidence to guide them. Without that evidence and that guidance, interventions could very well be ineffective, a waste of resources, and worse yet, possibly do more harm than good. When McLean asked how many cases of glioblastoma could be sufficient cause to open an investigation, she said she was not given a direct answer, and Garner could not be reached for comment. When speaking with Lori Koch, the director of the Illinois State Cancer Registry, McLean said that Koch told her that clusters just happen. After multiple attempts to contact Koch, she could not be reached for comment. I told her that this seemed very unusual, McLean said, and Coke responded, Well, sometimes these things just happen. As I said, cancer clusters just don't happen. And Coke replied, Well, if you had studied epidemiology, you would know that sometimes these things just happen. McLean said that Coke also told her the cancers don't typically cluster. However, the American Cancer Society reported that about 1,000 suspected cancer clusters are reported to state health departments every year. Additionally, the state public health department has only collected glioblastoma case data for Pike County from 1995 to 2020. In an email statement sent by the department to Renee Martin, the chief of staff for Senator Sally Turner, the department said that data did not indicate a cancer cluster. A review of Pike County glioblastoma case counts found 19 cases over 26 years, and we did not see any statistically significant elevation during the 26-year period, nor did we see clear evidence of increasing case counts, the department said in an email statement. An image taken from an email provided by Caitlin McLean indicated all of those cases. Martin said she has requested a meeting with Senator Rose, Senator Turner, the Illinois Department of Public Health, and McLean to discuss the concern in more depth. In the meantime, McLean said she felt she had a moral obligation to warn farmers in her community about the danger that nitrates pose to a person's health, so she reached out to farmers whom she knew in Monticello. Most of them had no idea that this was an issue, McLean said. Some of them are very alarmed. I don't think that it's anyone's fault. I want to be very clear about that. I just don't want people to lose their family the way I lost my father-in-law. McLean is continuing to track cases of glioblastoma in Monticello and has provided a form for people to use in order to report cases. We start our community news and notes each week by featuring an adoptable pet at the Pike County Animal Shelter. This week's star pet is Rupert. He's a beautiful, cuddly, black and white, short-haired kitty. Very socialized, as Rupert was fostered in a home setting with his siblings. They're all very sweet. They love taking turns being cuddled, and Rupert and his siblings are available for adoption. You can contact the shelter by email, and that is pietanimals@hotmail.com, or you can call the shelter to arrange an opportunity to meet the adoptable pets. The shelter's phone number is 217-762-7227. And next, we want to highlight some academic achievements of some Pike County residents. The University of Alabama rowing program placed a sport-leading 33 student-athletes on the 2024 academic All-Big 12 team, the conference announced on Tuesday. Included on that team, the academic All-Big 12 team first team, is Rennie Fultz of Monticello. Congratulations. Next, we have Nick Timmons of Monticello, who's among about 4,000 students from Miami University who received their degrees during spring commencement held in May. Timmons graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Business degree, majoring in accountancy and finance. A little closer to home, Millikan University honored more than 270 graduates in their class of 2024 with two commencement ceremonies in the Kirkland Fine Arts Center in May. Among the graduates are Kendry Barbie of Monticello and Mia Brandenburg of Cerro Gordo. Congratulations to all of these fine young people and their outstanding achievements. Today's paper contains six obituaries. The first honors Michael Scott Bailey, age 40, of Monticello, who passed away on July 13th at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was held. On July 19th at St. Philomena Catholic Church in Monticello, including a funeral mass, interment was in the Monticello Township Cemetery. Next, we remember Rick D. Baker, age 66, of Bement, who passed away on Wednesday, July 10th at his home in Bement. The family has announced that burial will be at a later date in the Bement Township Cemetery. Next, we honor Evelyn B. Norris, age 99, of Champaign, formerly of Decatur, who passed away on Sunday, July 7th at Carriage Crossing Senior Living Center in Champaign. Memorial services were held on Saturday, July 13th at the First United Methodist Church, which included visitation. Interment will be at the Monticello Township Cemetery. Next, we remember Kimberly Ogden, age 50, of Monticello, who passed away on Saturday, July 6th. Visitation was held on Friday, July 12th at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home in Monticello, followed by a funeral service and interment in the Monticello Township Cemetery. Next, we remember John A. Siebens, age 89, of Monticello, who passed away on Monday, July 8th at his residence. Private family services were held on Thursday, July 11th at the Mackie Wright Funeral Home, followed by interment in the Monticello Township Cemetery. And next we remember Mark C. Saya, age 70, of White Heath, who passed away on Wednesday, July 3rd. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Next, we have a wonderful feature about a father-son team teaming up for football with the Shriners Senior All-Star Game. This article by Dan Chamness. There is no such thing as perfection, but coaching your son in an all-star football game on a college football field might be pretty close. Such was the opportunity for the Welters, namely Monticello head coach Cully Welter and his son Trey Welter, who was a member of the Shriner Blue Team in their annual All-Star Game at Tucci Field on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. Trey was on the other side of the ball, so I did not directly coach him, said the longtime Monticello head coach, who also served as the head coach of the Blue Squad. Because I was not his position coach, per se, I was able to just enjoy spending some time with him and sharing his experience. When our season ended last year, I thought it was over. I'm very thankful to get to spend one more week of football with my son. The elder Welter has served as a coach 5 times, twice as head coach. The Shriners raise money for St. Jude to battle childhood cancer. As head coach, he was organizing the practices for the Blue Squad. His role during the game was coaching the defensive backs. You can't do much better than that, said Welter, of the reason for the game. It's great to see players and coaches from throughout the state come together to play in a game that means so much to so many who are suffering through no fault of their own. It also informs the younger generation of what a great cause this is. Cully Welter was selected to coach in the game because of his previous coaching experience. The selection process for coaches was, if you coached in the state championship game, you were a coach the following summer in the Shriner All-Star Game. Since this was the 50th year of the game, I was really happy to be involved, said Welter. They now select coaches based on whether or not they have coached the game yet or not. They wanted to see some of the coaches that had previously coached to be at this 50th anniversary game. Trey Welter caught one pass for 15 yards for the blue team, which lost a 21-13 battle to the red team. The senior was nominated and then was among the many seniors selected. While other All-Star games might feature a North versus South dynamic, the Shriners and the organizers of the game want the game to be well played and even. It was great being out there and being able to compete in the game, said the 5'9", 140-pound player, who played on special teams as well as catching the pass. My teammates and I got to be friends pretty quickly through all the bonding in the dorms and the practices. It was fun to suit up against and team up with some of the state's best seniors. Playing for my father one last time was beyond cool. Welter did not know until approximately 2 months after the season ended that he had an opportunity to play in this special game. For 1 week, he and his teammates were bunking in the dorms at Illinois Wesleyan University. The Bloomington Shrine Club, in conjunction with the Illinois Coaches Association, started the fundraising game in 1975. For 22 years, until 1997, the game was held at Hancock Stadium on the campus of Illinois State University in Normal. Then from 1998 until 2012, the players, which number 120 every year, 60 suiting up for each team, bunked at Eureka College for over 10 years while the game was played at Peoria Stadium. Since 2012, it has been played at Tucci Stadium. The 1975 game featured 5 future NFL players, while 4 played in the 1981 contest. A total of 37 of the participants have advanced to the NFL. Today, some of the former participants are coaching at both the high school and college levels. Congratulations to father and son Welter on this wonderful occasion. The Monticello Police Department has announced that it is partnering with the Illinois Department of Transportation and more than 200 local law enforcement agencies to step up enforcement efforts across the state in order to reduce speeding. Throughout the month of July, motorists can expect increased patrols looking for speeders as well as other traffic violations. Speeding causes unnecessary danger on our roads, said Chief Rob Bross. Speed greatly reduces a driver's ability to steer safely around another vehicle, a hazardous object, or an unexpected curve. Speeding drivers put themselves, their passengers, and other motorists at tremendous risk. Our goal is simply to save lives. During the speeding enforcement blitz, officers will intensify their enforcement of posted speed limits. The speed enforcement effort is made possible by federal traffic safety funds administered by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Today's paper includes 2 features provided by OSF Healthcare to the Piatt County Journal-Republican to help us get through these dog days of summer. The first is, how much water is too much? When it's hot outside, people tend to reach for the water, but too much of a good thing can be a problem. It's called water intoxication, and it's making news. Recently, a young woman died from drinking too much water in a short amount of time, and a young boy was hospitalized after doing the same thing. Water intoxication comes from drinking too much water, says Elizabeth Clay, a nurse practitioner with OSF Healthcare, and it can lead to some severe symptoms. You can get a headache, become disoriented, you can become confused, nauseous, or even vomit, and it can be fatal. Other serious symptoms include muscle weakness, increased blood pressure, and double vision. The amount of water that a person should consume is going to be very individualized, says Clay, but overall, your kidneys can only handle so much, and that's between 0.8 and 1 liter. So you really don't want to be taking in more than that per hour in water. Water intoxication can affect anyone, but it's a problem that is especially common in people who participate in sporting events, military training, or working outside. Dehydration can play a major role in water intoxication because when a person feels that they're getting dehydrated, they may try to overcompensate and may drink too much water at one time. And your body simply can't handle that, says Clay. So, you'll start to get these symptoms, whether it's nausea, vomiting, confusion, just disruption of your brain activity. And that comes from that depletion of sodium. And so, your cells inside your brain are holding on to that water, and it causes swelling inside your brain, and that can lead to some very serious complications. Clay suggests taking frequent swallows throughout the day rather than chugging a bottle of water all at once. Also, eat a healthy diet to get the needed electrolytes, and don't drink just water. Sports drinks like Powerade and Gatorade, as well as coconut water and cow's milk, are full of electrolytes. There are no guidelines as to how much water a person needs each day. Some people still follow the 8x8 rule, which recommends drinking 8 8-ounce glasses of water a day. Still, it depends on certain factors like body weight, the amount of physical activity that you get, and the climate where you live. So if you can, stay indoors and out of the sun during the hot weather, says Clay. But if you must be outside, if you've got training or some sort of physical activity, or maybe your job or work requires you to be outside, just want to make sure that you're getting those electrolytes and the water that you need. Just don't overdo it. If you begin to experience symptoms after drinking too much water, call 911 immediately. Thanks to OSF Healthcare for providing this valuable information. They've also provided us guidelines for when we're doing outdoor activities, especially hiking. Regarding heat and cold, try hiking in the early morning or late afternoon when it's not as hot out. Regardless of the time, be sure to wear sunscreen with at least 30 SPF and reapply it every 60 to 80 minutes. Food and drink are essential, and hydration is critical on a hike. The rule of thumb is to drink about 1 liter for every mile or every hour you're on the trail. Some people even drink a liter on top of that, but gauge your intake carefully. Next, remember to wear lightweight, light-colored, and loose-fitting clothing. Tight and heavy clothes weigh you down and constrict your breathing, while dark-colored clothes absorb more sunlight and make you hotter. Uneven trails could lead to falls and injuries to your arms or legs. Anderson said there's no perfect way to fall, but there are things to keep in mind. The biggest takeaway for a safe fall is to protect the most vital parts of your body, such as including your head. If it's a ground-level fall, try to fall with grace and ease. For ankle injuries, remember the RICE method. Rest, ice the injury, compress the ankle, and elevate it. Avoid poisonous plants. Get to know what poison ivy looks like by looking at it in a book or on a screen before you see it for real. Protect yourself from bug bites. Carry insect repellent and a first aid kit, and make a plan. And have fun. That's the number one part. This concludes our reading of the July 17th edition of the Piatt County Journal Republican. My name is Lori Talkington for the Illinois Radio Reader, and I invite you to join us again next week.